This is Dr. Jimmy Nichols, equine nutritionist. On this podcast, we will explore unique cases, debunk popular myths, and break down advanced research data. Join me for a little fun, a lot of science, and some real-world advice for feeding horses. Hey everyone, it's Dr. Jimmy. Thanks for tuning in to episode 34. This is a listener question episode, and I'm going to touch a little bit on wobbler syndrome and also how to feed weanlings through two-year-olds. And then I'm even going to share with you guys a few of the secrets or tips that I use when I've been working with some larger breeding operations to help reduce things like OCDs in growing horses. So let's just get right on into it. The first question is from a listener who asked me to address nutrition when it comes to dealing with a horse with wobblers. Okay, so for those of you who may not be familiar with wobblers and horses, I'll give you just a brief rundown. So basically, wobbler syndrome, it gets its name because the primary sign is a horse that has maybe a really uncoordinated gait. Okay, so he's basically what happens is he's not physically aware of where his legs are or how they're placed. A lot of times those horses, they might just kind of seem a little bit clumsy. It can progress over time or it can happen overnight. So wobblers is kind of a little bit back and forth in that regard. There's not like a certain progression of the disease always. But sometimes, you know, people will just say, oh, he's just clumsy. And like, it just never goes away and he never really learns how to place his feet. And then all of a sudden it's just, he becomes really uncoordinated and, you know, the name wobbler, right? I mean, that's where it gets its name is just that horse looks and acts like he's just going to fall down all of the time and maybe even does. So I think a lot of times, you know, those horses, a lot of times people, when they see the way that those horses are acting, because it kind of has that neurologic look to it, a lot of times people will actually suspect that the horse has EPM. I think that's just, you know, where our minds go anytime that we see a neurologic problem with the horse. But actually, so Dr. Bill Bernard, who is a veterinarian at Rudin Riddle Equine Hospital in Lexington, Kentucky, he actually speculates that there may be more horses out there with wobbler syndrome than EPM. So, you know, if you're interested in learning how to make that differentiation, there's a good article out there. It was published by The Horse, and Dr. Bernard and then also Dr. Stephen Reed, they kind of just work through that article and they help sort through some of those differences between a horse with EPM and a horse with wobblers. So if you want to read that article, you should be able to find it online if you go to thehorse.com. And the title of that article is What's Wobbler Syndrome? So it's a good read for anybody that's dealing with a horse that maybe has some neurological conditions and you've been suspecting EPM. You know, wobbler syndrome is definitely something to just keep in the back of your mind if you've got that kind of horse. So, okay, back to what wobbler syndrome is. In a nutshell, the reason that these horses wobble or have that incoordination is because their spinal cord is being physically compressed, okay? So that compression, it can come from a variety of things, all right? It's not always the same thing. So in some horses, it could be due to maybe like a narrowing of the vertebral canal. So that basically means that there's just not adequate space for the spinal cord and the associated nerves. So, you know, a lot of times that can be caused by bones that have grown incorrectly, okay? And it could also, it could be caused by arthritis, maybe from age or performance. Another way that compression can happen is, let's say that the ligaments inside the canal experience hypertrophy or kind of excessive growth or excessive bulking up, okay? So that can happen if let's say that those joints in the vertebrae are a little bit unstable or loose, and those ligaments are having to compensate. Okay, so in that situation with those ligaments, if they're having to compensate to stabilize those joints or those vertebrae, they're going to be getting worked a lot harder than they normally should. And that's going to make them stronger, yes, but it's also, it can also make them a little bit bigger in size. And so that can then actually cause pressure on the spinal cord and nerves. And then just keep in mind too, I mean, other things that can cause pressure on the spinal cord would be, you know, if the vertebrae are misaligned, okay, or soft tissue inflammation, all right? So if you've got any kind of inflammation that's going on within the body, and specifically around that vertebral column, that can certainly put undue pressure on the spinal cord. So basically, if there's compression against the spinal cord, that is what basically causes those horses to have wobbler syndrome and exhibit those signs of incoordination, or just the, it's almost like they're not even aware where their limbs are at. So wobbler syndrome, it's considered what it's called a multifactorial disease. Okay. So that basically means that there are, several things that can contribute to it. And it usually takes a really special combination of several of those things to actually lead to, that syndrome showing its, you know, itself. So diet, activity, conformation, those are probably the three components. But one of those things alone isn't going to cause a horse to have wobbler syndrome. So if, you know, like, let's say, so for example, on the nutrition side, things that can cause growth problems in the vertebrae are, excessively high starch diets, and copper deficiency. Okay. So those are two things that we know affect proper growth of bones within horses. So let's say you have a young horse that just his genetics, he genetically has a narrower vertebral canal in his spine. Okay, so it's just, there's just a physically smaller space within his vertebrae for that spinal cord to run. I mean, that's just the way his genetics are, okay? Which is no big deal normally, okay? But then let's say that when he was a growing horse, so let's say he was fed a diet of, you know, just oats and nothing else. So no diet balancer, no trace mineral, you know, no vitamin mineral, nothing else, just plain oats and then either hay or pasture. So forage and oats. Well, oats are really, really high in starch. And we know that oats also do not contain an adequate amount of trace minerals, specifically like copper and zinc. Okay. So that horse's vertebrae, they're not going to just stop growing just because there's not enough adequate, you know, copper or zinc in the diet. All right. They're going to continue to grow, but when they grow, they're not going to have those building blocks to allow that proper bone fill and that proper structure. So those bones are going to grow weak, or maybe they grow slightly malformed. Okay. So then we're still dealing with the same horse. So he's got a small vertebral canal. That's, you know, thanks to his genetics. And then his nutrition program was less than adequate on the trace mineral side, and he was given a high energy or a high starch diet, okay? Now, let's say later on in his career, we then start to add activity to his life, okay? So we're riding him every day. Maybe we've turned him into a performance horse and he's being hauled and worked really hard. Well, that daily stress can then cause inflammation of those soft tissues, and maybe even if there's enough, you know, malalignment or malformation, I should say, of those vertebrae, maybe there are some bone spurs or something that is causing that horse now to develop arthritis. Okay, so we have three things now that are all factors for this horse to experience compression of that spinal cord and actually exhibit signs of wobblers. Okay. So kind of going back to this, you know, it being a multifactorial disease. Now, if the only thing he was dealing with was that smaller spinal column, okay, and his nutrition was spot on and he didn't have any malalignments and, you know, his performance, he didn't have arthritis and soft tissue inflammation. I mean, if that's all he was dealing with, he's probably going to get along fine in life, okay? Let's say he has a completely normal, like a nice wide opening of that spinal column, and he had poor nutrition and there were some abnormalities. Well, in that situation, maybe there's enough room in that spinal column still because of his genetics, they gave him plenty of room, you've got some room for error, right? Maybe you do have a little bit of room for inflammation or soft tissue damage from exercise. Maybe you do have room for a little bit of arthritis to develop before it really starts putting that pressure on that spinal cord. So again, it's not one thing. It's always going to be a combination of things that kind of come together into the perfect storm that are going to cause these horses to have wobblers. So kind of circling this back around to nutrition, since obviously this is a nutrition focused podcast, this one is a little bit tricky because really the best approach from a nutritional perspective is prevention. Okay. So if you are responsible for breeding and growing horses, I highly recommend that you touch base with an equine nutritionist and just make sure that you're providing an adequate amount of energy in the diet without getting to a place where the diet contains too much starch. Okay. Number one. And then more importantly, please, I absolutely beg you, make sure that you are providing an adequate trace mineral program in that diet for those growing horses. Now, I have said this probably a million times to people, okay, hay and oats, whether you feed them alone or, you know, if you're on a forage only diet, you know, so maybe that's just pasture or just hay or just hay cubes or whatever, that alone does not contain adequate trace mineral amounts to support a horse's mineral needs. If someone feeds hay and oats, okay, even that combination of hay and oats or forage cubes and oats does not contain an adequate amount of trace minerals, all right? So if there is one thing that you do, if you are responsible for a growing horse, if there is one thing that you can do, provide those horses with either a balanced feed, or if you don't want to use a feed, please at least provide a diet balancer, okay? So for those of you who are looking possibly for recommendations, my favorite feed for growing horses and for broodmares is one called Intensify Growth and Development, and that's made by Blue Bonnet Feeds. And then my favorite diet balancer, if you'd rather go a diet balancer route, or if you have to feed less than recommended levels of the growth and development, you can balance that back by using a supplement called 101 Diet Balancer, and you can find that from Stride Animal Health. So both of these are, they're low starch options, and they're both going to make sure that, you know, your horses have those building blocks that are necessary to build the strongest, healthiest bone possible. Okay. So I'm going to say this again, taking mineral away. Mineral is so important. Okay. And when I say mineral, I mean specifically trace minerals. So copper is a trace mineral. And as I mentioned earlier, copper is one of those things that we know if it's deficient, it dramatically impacts the integrity and the quality of that bone. Now, something that people kind of forget sometimes is that it's not just copper, right? So if you were to just go out somewhere and buy a straight copper supplement and add that to the diet, you could actually run into some pretty serious problems because copper has to also be in the diet at proper ratios relative to things like zinc and manganese. Okay, so again, I encourage you guys to work with an equine nutritionist because that way you can ensure that those trace minerals have been properly balanced to one another and are also included in the diet at the right amount. So, I mean, one of the worst things that you can do for a growing horse is take away whatever portion of nutrition is supplying those trace minerals, okay? So I see this often, you know, people will be feeding a grain or a feed of some kind. It's a low starch feed. It's well formulated. It's, you know, it's proper for that animal or for that foal. And all of a sudden, maybe there's some fasciitis that shows up, you know, a little bit of inflammation in a growth plate, which is very, very, very common and almost always self-resolving, right? But owners, you know, they see that and they get scared. And the first thing they do is they jerk the feed away, okay? Well, you know, fasciitis is typically going to self-resolve within, you know, 30-ish days, 45 days, 60 days. And so that owner is going to jerk that feed away and then it's going to resolve. And then, that horse has now gone a month or 2 months without the right minerals in the diet. Well, again, it's not like the bones and the body just push pause, right? It's not like just because you pull the feed away, it's not like that horse just stops in its tracks in its growing process. That horse's body still continues to grow, but it's going to grow with areas of weakness, Okay, so you took away all of those building blocks that were supposed to be used by the body to get maximum bone fill and maximum structural integrity. When you pull that away, the body does the best it can with what it has. Yeah, right. So if there's one thing that you take home from this particular episode is, don't take mineral away. And if you're not providing mineral, please, please, please provide it. Now, there are going to be some, okay, sorry, back to wobblers. Okay. There's going to be some of you out there who are already dealing with a wobbler horse, and you can't go back in time and prevent that. So, you know, at that point, the only place that nutrition can really have any kind of significant impact is, you know, if the cause of the compression is due to soft tissue inflammation, or some kind of inflammation that's maybe associated with arthritis. Okay. So in those cases, you know, again, this is just going to solve all of your problems, but something you can do is look into, or at least try a supplement that contains the New Zealand green-lipped mussel. Okay, so green-lipped mussel has actually been shown through research to be really effective at reducing chronic inflammation in the body, and especially inflammation that has been associated with arthritis. So, you know, if you are looking for a New Zealand green-lipped mussel, the one that I typically lean on is a supplement called Rewind. And I'll drop info for that in the show notes if you want to go take a look. So I wish that there was a little more that I could offer to those of you who might be dealing with wobbler syndrome horses. But, you know, from a nutritional perspective, unfortunately, we're just a little bit limited. So I do encourage all of you, though, to work with your veterinarians and be open-minded about those horses that maybe you have thought were EPM cases, okay, especially if you have done treatments for EPM and they just don't seem to be working the way that you think they should, or that horse just has never really been able to regain their coordination after those treatments. So it's just something to keep in the back of your mind. It's possible that it could be wobblers that you're dealing with. But that, again, is certainly something that your veterinarian is going to need to help you sort through and kind of identify. Now, the next question is around recommended feeding programs for growing horses. And specifically, this listener wanted me to address weanlings through two-year-olds. I like the timing of this question because it kind of allows me to dive just a little bit deeper into those things that we can do to help prevent those growth abnormalities that, if not addressed, can lead to things later in life like wobbler syndrome or, you know, OCDs or early breakdown of in performance, you know, shortening that performance lifetime of a horse. So in all honesty, you know, a horse's nutrition begins with the mare that's going to carry the baby. Okay. So this may be a recipient mare in some cases. I know that the listener asked me to begin with weanlings, but I would be remiss if I didn't start at the point of conception. Okay. So the cattle industry actually has a term called fetal programming that's pretty well understood by producers. What it means is that the nutrition that's provided to a baby in utero is going to have long-lasting effects on that baby later in life. Now, I said cattle industry, but actually human researchers really understand this as well. I mean, this is not a new phenomenon, but you know, it comes into effect for horses. And I feel like the horse industry doesn't talk about this enough, especially from the nutritional perspective. So if we want to set, you know, our foals up for success, we need to make sure that we start first with the mare and her nutrition. So make sure you're providing adequate trace minerals. Man, are you feeling a theme or what? Trace minerals, trace minerals, trace minerals. Okay. So many people, I think they get the impression that all they need to do is feed more calories and more protein, but that's not the case. Okay. So in fact, you know, calorie and protein requirements don't actually start to increase in a pregnant mare until she's about at month 6 of gestation, okay? So for the first 5 months, a pregnant mare should be fed the same that she would be fed if she had no baby, okay? So in fact, if you start overfeeding that mare in those first 5 months, you can actually pose a risk for making that mare obese, which can then back to this whole fetal programming thing, can actually have negative effects on the foal, okay? In fact, those foals, so there's been a little bit of research, well, there's been quite a bit of research done on the human side, but there are studies that suggest that, like, in women, overnutrition or overeating or obesity during pregnancy can actually then cause metabolic effects later on in life for offspring. Okay. So, you know, I don't think that it's too far off to suspect that we could see some of those same things in horses. You know, thinking about how many horses out there now are dealing with metabolic diseases and insulin resistance and things like that. I mean, I've got to think, you know, if there was a way to go back and do this study or do some kind of research around this, you know, it'd be interesting to see how those mares were fed when that baby was in utero and what their body condition score was, and if they were being provided overnutrition, or, you know, just to see if there's anything that relates. So sorry, that was just kind of me thinking out loud, but So back to this. So in the first 5 months, the most important thing that you can do for a developing baby in utero is to provide adequate trace minerals to the mare. Again, you can do that through a diet balancer like 101, or you can offer a specially formulated, try to keep it low starch feed. So something like intensified growth and development. But the key here is to make sure that you're feeding based on label directions. So I like to give examples. So let's say I have an 1100 pound mare that's in good body condition and I just bred her. Okay. What does it look like now? What am I going to do? So from months 0 through 5 of gestation, okay, I'm going to give that mare all the hay and all the pasture that she can eat. And then I'm going to feed 4 pounds of intensified growth and development. Okay. From months 6 through 8 of gestation, again, all the hay and pasture that she wants, but I'm going to bump that growth and development up to 6 pounds per day. Okay. So when I say 4 pounds and 6 pounds, I'm talking about within a 24-hour period. So I would be feeding, you know, 2 pounds or 3 pounds twice daily, morning and night. Okay. So then in months 9 through 11, all right, so that essentially last trimester, I might actually go to like a 50-50 mix of alfalfa and grass hay for the forage. And then I'm going to bump that growth and development up to 8 pounds per day. So 4 pounds in the morning, 4 pounds at night. And then just to give you guys a little bit of perspective on that particular feed, that intensified growth and development, a 3-quart, you know, square plastic 3-quart horse feed scoop, one of those completely full is 4 pounds. Okay. So if you were using that scoop and you had that mare in that last trimester, I would do a scoop in the morning and a scoop at night of growth and development. Now, the reason that I would possibly consider adding alfalfa into the mix right there is as that baby starts to take up more room in the abdomen, the mare is going to feel a lot less like eating, okay? And so she might not actually eat as much hay as we want her to eat. So grass hay obviously is going to have a lower nutrition profile compared to alfalfa. So we would need her to eat a lot of grass hay. So if she's not eating as much grass hay as we would want her to, I'm going to need to move over to alfalfa and introduce a little bit of that into the diet so I can get a little bit more bang for my buck and a little bit more nutrition out of a smaller amount of forage if she's not, you know, willing to take in that much bulk. And just a side note, I actually experienced that myself with my own pregnancies. I mean, by the time you get to that last month, I mean, I don't know about anyone else out there who's experienced this, but my personal experience was I just didn't want to eat anything. I mean, that baby was taking up so much room in my stomach or in my abdomen. It just felt like if I ate even 3 bites of anything, I just felt full and I would get heartburn and it was just uncomfortable. So that, you know, my own pregnancies were part of what gave me this light bulb moment about what mares might be dealing with and how we can adjust the hay that we give them to still get that maximum nutritional effect out of it. So then let's say the mare has given birth and she's began lactation. So for those first 3 months of lactation or those first 3 months of the baby's life, I'm really going to make sure that I monitor the body condition of the mare. If she is really dropping fast, I may go to like a 75-25 mix of alfalfa and grass, or I might even just go full alfalfa. If that baby is really pulling nutrition off of her and she's losing body condition, Or I might just bump up to 10 pounds of growth and development. So a little bit of that, you're just going to have to watch that mare and know kind of what she needs in that situation. You know, so older mares are going to react differently than younger mares. So all of that's going to come into play. And then at 4 months of lactation, I'll drop that back. So like if I had gone up to 10 pounds of growth and development for those first 3 months, now again, the first 3 months of lactation, that is the highest nutrient requirement that any horse will ever have. Okay. So that is the point where you have to provide the most nutrition. And sometimes I'll have people who are maybe, having their first experience at being a mare owner and having a baby. And they've, you know, when I tell them they may need to feed 10 pounds per day of growth and development, like their eyes bug out and they think 10 pounds of a feed, that's crazy. I would never feed that much feed. Well, the reality is they've never had a horse that has that high nutrition requirements. Okay. So don't let that scare you. It's only temporary. So basically if they were at that 10 pounds for the first 3 months, at 4 months, I would drop them down to that 8 pounds. Because that baby now is going to be starting to eat some hay, probably starting to eat some of that feed with the mare. It's not going to be pulling as much milk and is not going to have quite as high a demand on that mare as it did early. So one thing to note, I guess, if I do have a mare that is maybe a really easy keeper, okay, those feeding rates that I mentioned before, I might cut those feeding rates in half. And then balance out with a trace mineral or a diet balancer supplement. So I would top dress 101 diet balancer on top of those reduced rates, just to make sure that that mare and that baby are getting the adequate trace mineral support that they need. All right, so now we're at the point of weaning. I like to keep things simple whenever it's possible. So I really like this program because you can use the same feed that you were giving the mare. So that intensified growth and development, or whatever specially formulated growth feed that you prefer, you want to use that for the weanling itself. So hopefully, that weanling had begun to maybe steal some bites from mama's feed pan over the last few months and is starting to get at least somewhat adapted to eating feed. Maybe you've even started to offer him just a little bit in a separate pan to get him accustomed to going to the feed pan and, eating pellets and just the taste of the feed. If you can do all of that while he's still with the mare, that's going to take away one more stress factor when it comes weaning time. So something else to keep in mind, if you do choose to feed intensify growth and development, that product is actually formulated so that you can use a really simple rule of thumb with your weanlings. Okay, that rule is feed 1 pound for every month of age. Okay. So let's say you wean when that foal is 4 months old, you would feed 4 pounds per day of intensified growth and development. Let's say when they're 5 months, okay, you would feed 5 pounds per day. When they're 6 months, you feed 6 pounds per day and so on. So I generally, as far as the limit, like when do you stop that? Because, you know, obviously you don't want to be feeding 15 pounds per day. The limit on that generally is going to be between 6 to 8 pounds per day. And that limit is going to depend on a few things. The expected mature size of the horse is one, okay? The quality of the hay that they're eating is another one. So for example, if I'm working with, you know, maybe a really large breed horse that is eating just grass hay, okay, I'm going to lean more towards that 8 pounds per day of the growth and development as being kind of that upper level, you know? So at, you know, 6 months of age, he'd be on 6 pounds. At 7 months, he'd be on 7 pounds. At 8 months, he'd be on 8 pounds. At 9 months, he'd be on 8 pounds. At 10 months, he'd be on 8 pounds. So 8 pounds would be my upper limit on that. Okay. I generally am not going to go over that 8 pounds because that feed is designed to provide, you know, adequate nutrition up to that rate. If you go over it, you're just really oversupplying a lot of things that the body's just going to have to kind of work harder to excrete. Now, unless you're dealing, if you're breeding draft horses and you've got, you know, obviously really big horses, then you'll go over that rate because it's all relative to body size. Now, so on that same note, if I'm working with, let's say I'm working with cutting horses and their forage source is just straight alfalfa hay, okay, then I'm going to stay a little bit closer to being, you know, at a 6 pound per day max. So when those babies are 5 months, they get 5 pounds, 6 months, 6 pounds. But then when they're seven months old, they'll stay at that 6 pounds. So 6 pound would be kind of my ceiling there. And then I, whatever the ceiling is, you generally keep them at that amount, all the way through their 2-year-old year. So as they're, getting broke, you know, starting into training, their nutrient requirements because of that added activity are going to continue to increase, even though their growing nutrient requirements are going down. So it actually ends up being a wash, and you basically keep them at that same feeding rate. So a few things to note when you are feeding growing horses. If you have a breeding operation, and let's say you have concerns about OCDs, maybe all of your horses get radiographed or x-rayed before a sale, or maybe you know that you've got a little bit of genetics, you know, in your lines that tend to throw babies with OCDs. There's actually a protocol of supplements that can be used to help improve your chances of getting healthy, strong bones. So I've used this on several breeding operations, and I've actually been able to reduce the number of OCDs by about half. I mean we, our team of consultants and everybody that we work with, we've had really good luck at being able to pull down those OCD rates. And that's assuming that the breeding operations are making sure that they manage all of the components. So just remember, nutrition is only a third of the equation, okay? So genetics and management are the other two. So you've got to make sure that, you know, as a breeder, you are doing the best that you can to reduce the genetic potential and then improve your management and take care of your management in a way that helps prevent the chances of those horses developing OCDs. So sometimes I have people who are like, well, what do you mean management? So an example of one management strategy would be get those horses onto a plane of nutrition and keep them on it consistently. Okay. So a lot of times I will see people that will wean their horses. They will, you know, those foals will get grain for 1 month or 2 months until they're kind of, you know, straightened out and not stressed out anymore. Everything looks good. And then they'll just kick those horses out into the pasture and not give them any grain for the next 2 or 3 months. Then they'll bring them back in and, you know, they want to start working with them. So then they put them back on grain. Okay. That's a management, that management can have negative effects on the quality of those bones. Okay. So by providing nutrition and then pulling nutrition and providing nutrition and pulling nutrition, you get this, up and down wavy effect. And that can actually lead to some pretty negative effects on the bone quality. But, you know, so if you do everything that you can from a nutrition and from a management perspective, then that leaves genetics really as your only wild card. And you just stand a lot better chance of having healthy horses. So to give this a little bit of perspective, my personal experience has been that, you know, and so my experience, meaning what I've seen from other operations and what I have heard in my communications with, you know, veterinarians that are working with larger growing breeding operations in the equine industry, particularly on the Western side. You know, it seems like the average rate of OCDs in the Western industry is going to be between 10 to 12% if you are doing everything that you can from a nutrition and management perspective. Okay. So for every 10 horses that you breed, basically you can expect that one of them is going to have OCDs, and that's, you know, that's pretty common. Okay. Now I know of many, many operations where that number is much, much higher. And, particularly when they were on a poor nutrition program, and then simply getting the nutrition program in line. Okay. So using a feed like Intensified Growth and Development has actually been able to bring those operations back into that 10 to 12%, you know, average OCD range. I've worked with a few operations that, you know, weren't satisfied with industry average. And so we introduced something called the orthopedic program into those operations. And by adding that extra measure of support, we've actually been able to get that rate of OCDs under that 10% average. So what is the orthopedic program? First and foremost, you've got to make sure that you're starting with an adequate baseline of nutrition. So that means good hay and good feed with balanced trace minerals, all right? So ideally, those minerals would be bound to a single amino acid which is going to provide maximum absorption. So that's why I keep leaning so hard on intensified growth and development and 101 diet balancer, is because I know that the specific trace minerals that are used in those two products have that single amino acid organic trace mineral package in it. Not all organic trace minerals are created the same. Okay. So just because someone says, oh yeah, we use organic minerals, that doesn't really tell you a whole lot. You need to find out, you know, what kind of organic minerals are used, and those that are bound to a single specific amino acid, in my opinion, are far superior to the others. And when I say my opinion is based on, you know, the 250 plus research studies that have actually been done on those particular trace minerals. So the base for your program, you know, I typically, again, I'm going to lean on intensified growth and development if you're using a feed. If you don't want to do a grain, then you could use 101 diet balancer and get that same trace mineral package. Okay. So after you know that that base nutrition program is adequate, so good quality hay, appropriate trace mineral supply, then comes this unique set of supplements. Okay. So the three that I use are called OrthoMax, Surge, and Fish Oil Factor. Okay, so I use those three supplements for a minimum of 90 days, and I typically start supplementing at about 8 to 9 months of age. Okay, so OrthoMax is going to provide important building blocks for cartilage and for bone density. Surge is going to increase blood flow or circulation into the bone, which is then going to improve nutrient delivery. So it's going to improve, it's going to increase the amount of those building blocks that actually get into the bone so that you can build a strong, dense bone. And then fish oil factor provides very good forms and very potent sources of omega-3s, which are going to have excellent anti-inflammatory benefits to the body. Okay, so I do that for 90 days. And then after the 90 days, I keep those horses on OrthoMax as their daily support. Now I use OrthoMax, Surge, and Fish Oil Factor in that specific order. So what I mean by that is if you can do all three, that is clearly the best case scenario. If you can only do two, okay, you should do OrthoMax and Surge. And if you can only do one for whatever reason, then you should do OrthoMax. So I want to point out that you know, the breeding operations where I've been able to cut those OCD rates in half, or where our team has been able to cut those OCD rates in half, those particular operations were on the intensified growth and development for their feed. And then they did do all three supplements for the full 90 days in the orthopedic program, and then kept those horses on OrthoMax, at least OrthoMax, then after that through their yearling year, through their 2-year-old year, as they're going into training, to help support those bones and joints. So if anyone is interested in having a nutrition consult, keep in mind that Bluebonnet Feeds does offer those free virtual consults with their team of nutrition consultants. So there's 10 consultants that are basically ready and willing to visit with you about your specific program and go through all of that. And I know that everybody, you know, we're still dealing with COVID, and it's not always easy for in-person things to happen. So if you'll go to bluebonnetfeeds.com and then click on that resources tab, you should be able to find the nutrition consult link, and that'll allow you to kind of start the consult process by filling out information about your horse that those consultants would need to know before they can really offer you, a good consultative approach and be able to work with you on your program. So I think that probably brings us to a close for today. I appreciate you guys listening. Again, I would love it if you would leave a review on your podcast app, and I would really like it if you shared this podcast with your friends. So again, if you have topics or questions that you would like addressed in future episodes, please either leave a voice message or you can email info@acbluebonnet.com. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Feed Room Chemist. If you like what you hear, be sure to share with your friends, post to social media, or give us a review. And as Winston Churchill used to say, no hour of life is wasted that is spent in the saddle. So go saddle up.